And one of the biggest double standards that exist is that players are held to a higher standard by the coaches than the coaches. So for example, if a coach is giving feedback and a player is looking away or being dismissive, that is a problem to the coach.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we're joined by Brett Ledbetter, the founder of What Drives Winning and one of the leading voices on leadership, culture, and team performance. Through his work with coaches, teams, and organizations around the world, Brett has helped leaders better understand what truly drives winning environments. His approach focuses on building strong cultures, developing meaningful habits, and aligning teams with a clear purpose. In this episode, we discuss how coaches can create a winning team and culture within their program, the habits that championship teams and coaches consistently demonstrate, and some key things to look for when recruiting someone to determine if they will truly fit into your culture. Please welcome to the podcast, Brett Ledbetter. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your hosts, as always, favorite voices to listen to, Alan Major, Doug Caputo here today. Alongside, we're fortunate, a man of many talents. He's a consultant, published author, industry-leading thinker, partner for high performers, people all across the board, founder of What Drives Winning. If you haven't heard of him, today's your day. Ladies and gentlemen, Brett Ledbetter. How are we doing, Brett? Welcome.
Great to be with you all today.
Oh, thank you, man. This has been great. We've been looking forward to this one. Yeah, very excited.
There's one thing I got to say, and it's absolutely great to be able to hear this side because we always talk to coaches, right? We always let, you know, give people their feedback and their path, not so linear, but then being able to hear the other side of things. I know you work more the 6 inches between your head is a big piece, the mental side, the performance consultant side. Just to give everybody a quick background, you know, what you do is more of a platform focused on building high performance cultures through character development, self-awareness, working with top line athletes and WNBA, NBA, NFL. And that's just touching on a few, a lot more than that. But you help us help them focus on the human side of performance and leadership. So the first thing we want to dive into is really just number one, what led you down the path of studying this? Because I feel like that is something that is unique. But then also it's pivotal for every single coach, every single program out there. What really caught your attention about the culture piece over these years?
My senior year of college, I started a basketball academy and we began working with 5th through 12th graders, male and female. And what we realized is we were developing a system and we could see them execute it whenever we were in a gym by ourselves. And even when we put defenders on them, but for whatever reason, it would not transition into the game. And so we started to ask the question, why? And ultimately, what we figured out is that most of the reasons were human related. And I didn't want my voice to be very present in that academy. And a lot of kids had dreams of playing beyond high school. So what we did is we started to interview coaches that they looked up to, and we would ask them questions, and then we would bring their information back to what we called the film room. And we would start every session in the film room, and it was always attacking the human-related issues that would get in the way of performance. And we started to see people grow their confidence, grow their courage, trying to do these things in the games. And then we figured out, wow, I think we might have stumbled upon something that a lot of people have stumbled on before us, but we were just getting instituted to it for the first time. And Dr. Jim Lehrer was such a critical piece to that puzzle because he taught us that who you're becoming as a result of the chase is the most important thing, but it also improves performance.
Wow. Hmm. Oh, I love that. Yeah, you almost, the mentality of capture the mind and the body will follow. This is always a kind of a famous quote that I heard long ago. But yeah, it's like the body will never do something that the mind won't agree to. So it sounds like you just completely put the mental piece under the microscope. And it's not surprising that the results followed the way they have.
And one of the things that we did, so Becky Burley and I met through the Oklahoma City Thunder coach, Mark Daigneault, and he was studying our footwork system at the time. This was probably 15 years ago. And there was a book called The Talent Code. Daniel Coyle wrote it.
Daniel Coyle,
And
yeah.
Becky was at some event speaking, and Daniel was as well. And she's like, "Hey, could we get you down to Gainesville?" And he's, "I just was. I was visiting with Mark Daigneault." So Becky then looked up Mark's name on the website and couldn't find it. So she had to call over because he was just an assistant to Billy Adonovan and like a special assistant. But it was so cool watching Mark because he was in this conference room adjacent to Billy and all the players were like gravitating to that room. And so Becky and Mark met. Mark said, "Hey, you need to go up and study this footwork." Becky came up there, and then what we ended up talking about was we actually were in the film room for a couple hours just operationalizing character development. She said, "What if we did this at the University of Florida?" And that's how it transitioned into the college space. And one of the things that we do with teams when we start working with them is we just ask them, what are the top three things that could get in the way of your team maximizing its ability? Everyone writes down their answers on the sheet of paper, and then we compile them. What we found is we divided this list into two categories, sport-related issues and then human-related issues. And all this, the answers were falling into the human-related side. And then once we started to see that, we said, okay, this is what we need to design a plan around. And that's how it morphed into the team environment.
Wow. No, I love that. Talking about hit going to the heart of the matter. Like that's not dancing around at all, man. You guys like put it right in front and center. I love that.
So you mentioned that you asked people to write down the top three things. What were some of the things that you would see consistently that people would put down?
Selfishness, complacency, lack of outside work, outside distractions, really all the things that the modern athlete has to go through. And what's interesting is if you ask coaches, what are some of the things that the modern athlete has to deal with that you didn't have to deal with when you were coming up? It's amazing what that list is. And that also informed our approach on how we were going to deal with these issues, is we wanted to create a question-based approach. Because if we pretended to know without directly experiencing it, our credibility could be questioned. And so if you can get them to reveal what it's actually, then you can meet them where they are and start developing solutions together to try and attack these situations. And because they own them more, they're more likely to be resilient when they do encounter setbacks.
Yeah, no, I love that because you're partnering with teams as opposed to an information dump, right? That would be the easy route is just to dump information, but it sounds like you make it a partnership and now they're giving you the answers to their own test in a way. And you're just saying, okay, based on what you just said, let's talk about this.
Well, and when a coach does that, it's incredible what happens. There's a great story with Tommy Lloyd, who's obviously doing a great job at Arizona. Anytime they would have a challenge, he would bring his leadership group in and they would sit at a table and he would just say, "How do I need to get better?" And he would put the onus on the players to give him feedback. And what he's doing in that situation, and it's not manipulative, this is just authentic to who he is he's showing them how to receive feedback. And then he's modeling that and creating safety in the room to where they then soften and want to hear his perspective on what they can do to be better. And when you have a coach that does that, it's amazing. How many coaches do you see after a poor performance? They're like, "I can't wait to get my team in the film room the next day." And we forget what it feels like to have that kind of feedback. And if the team was like, "I can't wait to get my coach in the film room the next day so I can let them know," that shows you that these are power-based relationships. And the more you can move to collaboration, I think it's healthier for the athlete because it shows them that you can still achieve at the highest level, even with that approach, but it also helps them with life beyond that, because if you have to rely on power, you're going to put a ceiling on yourself.
100%.
Interesting,
Now,
man.
there was a time where the throw people under the bus if you're not performing was just the way it was, sadly. But obviously, we're in a much different time and space, societally, family-wise, that the dynamics are so different.
A great tool that you can use if you're a coach is you could just ask the question, what if everyone did what you did? And just think about how that would affect the environment. So, for example, if you publicly call out someone, what if everyone did that? How would that affect the group dynamics? And when you can start looking at things from that lens, it teaches you so much about yourself and your leadership.
Yeah, for sure. I love that leadership group idea. Some people call it a council, different guys, they have different names for it, but it's probably anywhere from, what would you say, 2 to 4 players, 3 to 5 players. Every coach has a comfort level of how many people he wants in the room, but it sounds like Coach Lloyd is, he's made that's a group that he can speak through. And it's a group that he can not just coach through, but just speak through, because they help him. They're not informants. Some people think, oh, are these guys spies or what's going on in the locker room? It's not even about that. Like, this is collaboration in its purest form.
And how many times have we seen leaders be people that aren't necessarily the highest producers on the court? Because again, if you have a best player who is far and away the best player, most of the decisions are going to be tilted towards what they actually want. Maybe 10% of the decisions are not going to go their way. So when you have someone who's working every single day, delivering the effort and the enthusiasm and not getting the results from a playing time perspective or attention perspective, that's the most unselfish member of your team. And so if you can get people to understand that, a modern take on leadership would be the definition of the word leader being the leader is the person doing the right thing. When you look at it that way, doing is in the present moment. And everybody can do the right thing based on what you define as the standards of your program. And so everyone has accessibility to leadership in the moment if they want it. And I just think that the question about how big should the leadership council be, I think that's people can opt in to that because it is extra. And if anyone wants to grow and they're committed to investing the energy, I think you open it up to whoever is willing to do that.
Being able to have the camaraderie you're saying with your head coach and the players and the assistants, everybody kind of all compacting the one or coming, I guess, coming for one major goal in the end. I heard this recently and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. It was somebody had mentioned you should always let your players have a voice. Now, whether you actually follow through with what they say, but more or less in a film room, you ask them, hey, do we feel more comfortable going over the screens, under the screen, whatever the X and O portion might be? Do we feel more comfortable with this? If they say yes, they're more comfortable with it. Although, as a coach, maybe you may not think that's the best. Do you feel like allowing your players to have a voice? Now, again, as the head coach, you make the final decision, but allowing your players to have a voice on ultimately their fate, because then it's really everybody coming together to want to create a larger goal.
It maximizes the intellectual capital in the room when you give everyone a voice. And not only does it do that because you hear all the different perspectives, but it also can unite a group around ownership because they're all contributing. I think that from a coach perspective, I would think you would crave feedback, even if it's critical from your players. Now, what's interesting is if you just look at it purely scientifically, of course you would crave feedback because that's information that you can look at to get better. The challenge is it doesn't feel that way. And it's because we assign emotion to what's being said. But if you got feedback from your players and only half of it was relevant that you could actually do it, that's a 50% return on that conversation. That's outstanding. And so, when you look at it from that perspective, not only are you modeling that their voice matters because you're listening to it, but you're actually getting information that you can do something with that would immediately improve the situation. However, because of the emotions of the situation, very few are able to execute on that.
Yeah. No, I love that you said that, because one of my favorite things when guys would check out of a game is, hey, anything I need to know. if it's a defensive thing or some type of coverage thing or just in general. But I love that you said that because, again, those guys, like, they're in the thick of it at the moment. And it could be something team-wise that they say, if we did this, maybe we should go under this pick and roll when they're this far away versus let's not just play this the same way no matter what. If they're way away from the basket, coach, how about we go under? It's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And one of the biggest double standards that exist is that players are held to a higher standard by the coaches than the coaches. So, for example, if a coach is giving feedback and a player is looking away or being dismissive, that is a problem to the coach. How many times do you see the roles reverse to where the coach then gets the feedback? And to me, it's if you really want to do the best you can as a leader, you have to disassociate from status, meaning you become a member of the team and you're held to the same standard that everyone else is.
So really holding people, and I love how you said the eye contact. That is one thing that I've started to notice a lot more as an assistant, right? You, when the head coach is talking, you read the room, you look around and you see who's paying attention, who's not. Can you talk about one, just building the culture, one from the top of the line, so from the head coach, but then mainly, I guess the big portion of the question is from those upperclassmen, because I feel like those are the people who are the most pivotal in building a culture. Yeah, the head coach is the one who implements it. He's the one who instills what he wants. But then at the end of the day, those upperclassmen are the ones that have to carry that year to year, as long as when we're assuming that people are staying around nowadays for more than 1 year. But they're the ones who carry it year to year and teach it on to those younger and new people coming in the next year. Can you talk about like the upperclassmen and the head coaches building that culture in a program?
To your point, I think that the transient nature might be neutralizing the effect that once had. And using your example of being in front of the room and not everyone's looking at the coach, if a coach wants to have a sober analysis of their effectiveness with the team, that should be feedback to them that they need to get better. Instead of they're not paying attention. If you want to take it to the highest level, you would say, I need to get bring engaging stuff that they want to engage with. And I the best that I've been around look at it like that. Like, why are they not looking? What am I not saying to reach them? I need to figure that out.
Yeah, no, that's so true. It's funny. I think as coaches, we have to be more flexible in how we communicate to the degree that how players process information. And what I mean is, if practice stops and if a coach goes on for 3 minutes about a correction, number one, bodies are starting to dry up. Because you're not, and everybody's standing there. But what you're missing out is when you, if that happens, we're in a short chunks information society, especially that age group, 18 to 22, TikTok, YouTube, 15 second video, 30 second video, on and off. And I think it's important for us to be able to, we have to adjust at times. And we don't, it shouldn't be, they're just not locked in. Maybe not, right? Like, how about you deliver it in a way that's chewable? It may be chicken nuggets instead of a filet mignon.
I think that if you really want to be a great teacher, the master teachers inspire learning, plain and simple. And so if they are not engaged, you're not inspiring learning.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah. Because you're not catching their attention. And that's the biggest thing. When you're looking at one, I guess, transforming a culture in a program, we were just mentioning too, if new people coming into a program. Maybe you may not know exactly how to answer this, but just to get an idea, like how can you tell if somebody is worth bringing into a program? I don't know if you've necessarily been on the recruiting side of things to be able to see that, but just like I know you've worked with enough people to be able to read people and get a good asset or an idea of like how they talk, how they are as a person. When you're looking at recruiting a kid, one of the struggles I feel like coaches may find when they're trying to keep in a consistent culture is they're looking in the portal. They're like, okay, this kid could be great. He's averaging 20 points, 10 rebounds. He would be a huge asset for this program. But is he a culture killer? You can't go ask the coach because they're probably just going to tell you something different because they don't want to lose the kid because he's such a big piece. Is there a way to be able to like read from conversations with people, simply over the phone, over just having conversations. Is this kid going to be a good peace and culture killer or a good asset to our program?
I think a lot of coaches get distracted by talent. And I would challenge any coach on here listening to scan back your life, all the people that you've interacted with. Who is the best conversationally lifting information? And you can tell in evaluation when someone is a box checker versus someone is really digging into the details and the nuances to figure out whatever it is that they're trying to figure out based on what they value. And some of the best questions come from, they make you pause and think, why would he ask that? And one of the things that I've learned just working with people in general is that whatever someone's asking you, that tells you what they're seeking. And if you can get them to ask questions, that tells you what they're seeking. And if you just pay attention, you will start to see trends based on what you value. And the people that pursue that information, they're in the small minority.
Yeah, well said, man. But I wanted to pick your brain about this ever since we knew this pod was coming. I it drives me nuts when coaches say right now you can't build a, maybe it's harder to build a program in terms of retention with this core of freshmen coming back and three guys, now they're sophomores, now they're juniors. But I still think maybe building a program is annually, but I think building a culture is daily. How important is it for a coach and a program to make sure their identity is clear? Because to me, that affects who you bring in. That's a clear reflection of who you bring in. And if the identity is iffy, then I think there's a higher chance that who's coming through the door could be iffy because there's a cloudiness there.
One of the things that I would challenge any coach to do in their situation is that when you think that there's a challenge, that's also an opportunity. And if it's a challenge for you, it's probably a challenge for a lot of people. So can you turn that into a competitive advantage for you? And so if you look at the transient nature of athletics, what else has a transient nature? We're talking about basketball, you could look at the G League. How does the G League operate and function when they could be getting, hey, we need to get this many minutes to this guy by tonight? If you can do that, you can do this, because they would look at this and be like, you guys got a lifetime of time to accelerate that. So it shows that it's hard, but it's possible. And I think that when a coach can look at it like, all right, and again, I think this is a separator for coaches. If they can look at it like, no matter what my body of work is, I am earning trust moment by moment. I don't deserve your trust. I need to earn it every moment. Then you're not creating entitlement in the air of the environment that you're leading, because everything is earned. But when you think I deserve, they should look at me, they should do this, they should, whatever they should fill in the blank is, if you feel that way, that is the definition of entitlement. If everyone did what you did, guess what? You have an environment of entitlement.
So good, man. That's so good.
There's that one thing I love to, I started to notice over the years is the coaches start to put out the way they act, the way they behave on a day-to-day basis. The players start to understand that over time. They start to slowly turn into the coach. Now, they not fully, you're not the same person. No, you have different traits and so on, but you get some similarities to how that head coach acts, and you start to slowly turn into that. The more you're around it, the consistently you're around it. So that's the one thing I love, and I know we covered it on here too, is just like, one, the head coach holding the standard, but then everybody else making sure to follow suit, because ultimately they're all going to transition into the same thing. And again, we were talking in the very beginning, just the greater goal. Everybody wants to have a successful year, but no, that's some great stuff. Now, I guess I would ask one more question, and it's going on a different topic, changing things, but just any coaches that you have been around. I know you've been around some of the best and just top of the line, and I'm sure you've probably seen some people at the bottom of the line too. The whole coaching profession, if there was anything that you would say, hey, this is one thing I think coaches should maybe work on to be the best version of themselves or just to be a better coach, what would that advice be?
One of my favorite lines from Sam Presti is he viewed his job as building an environment where people can do their best work. So I think that's a really good starting point. So when you ask yourself or other leaders, what's the most important thing you do to build an environment where people can do their best work? That's the question we asked a lot of coaches. And it came back to three things: how you define, manage, and model your expectations and vision as a leader. Defining is proactive, managing is reactive, and modeling is all the time. And if you can create consistency with your actions and you are the physical manifestation of the standard, that's going to give your word integrity to where then you can help win the influence when they come in below the line to convert those below the line behaviors into winning habits.
That didn't put a
Perfect.
bow on it. I don't know what does. No, that's so good, man. But what you just said, define, manage, model, that takes humility as a coach, right? Because you've got to look at yourself and say, you know what? I got to get better in this area.
That's the
So
irony, isn't it? Because at college, the coach is always selling themselves because that's what they do to try and get recruits, where it's the exact opposite at the professional level, where they're more backstage. So humility is required. It's part of the price of admission at the professional level because you're managing people that have more power than you do. And so you're forced into a more sophisticated way of managing, which requires humility. And that's what I love about studying the two is at college, you can get away with things a little bit because if you do have a narcissistic viewpoint and you can sell that really well, you can attract talent. And some people have more resources than others in college. So that can cover up some of the incompetencies that you might possess as a leader. And people can still associate you with being a great coach when really it might be other reasons that you would be succeeding. So to bring it back to the last question, who has done the best that I've seen? It's not necessarily the most visible coaches. It could be a coach that's inherited a program that is under 500 and they're coaching every possession in an intentional way, building a foundation that can eventually sustain success when they have it.
yeah. Oh, exactly. But it's like you're trying to, that's to me the essence of you're trying to build a culture and not just win a game.
Amen.
Yeah.
One, I just want to say thank you very much. I know obviously you
Oh,
have a lot
man.
going on your plate, but
This
the
is
work that
awesome.
you have done, I know Mage was talking with me, and the work that you have put out there is absolutely tremendous to be able to help people such in coaching roles and all across all the boards. I don't want to say just coaching, but since we're primarily talking for coaches, it's tremendous. So if anybody out there is listening, definitely look into it. There's some great work out there, some WNBA, some NBA players that he has worked with that have tremendously helped. So thank you for being able to take some time out of your busy day to just go over this with us. And I know a lot of this information is going to help people because cultures, and I know we say it on our podcast all the time. I'm not just saying this because you're on here, I swear. Culture is the biggest thing in a program. If you do not have a good culture, I think it can break a lot of things. There are teams that have had success without good culture, but that's a one in a
It's
million.
not
Yeah,
sustainable.
it's a
Yeah,
one in a
it's not.
million, and it's not. That's a whole different story. But thank you again for being on here. We really do appreciate it.
It's great to be with you all today.
I'm going to end it with this. You care about people, and I'm going to hit you with your own line here. What if everybody did what you did? And I wish everybody did what you did because you care about people, and you're obviously you found an unbelievable niche through the sporting and performance world. But caring about people, it takes a sincere approach to people to do what you do. And I hope that young coaches, if anything else that they've heard, can just pull that from this, is that if you have a sincere concern for everybody in your building, that's going to go a long way. So thank you so much for one, what you do, but also just for taking time with us.
No doubt. And everybody out there, thank you all for tuning in to another episode, the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Keep working and keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. Thank you.